Hello and welcome to Rewatchable, episode 19. Today we'll be discussing episodes 5, So You Think You Know Somebody, and 6, Return of the Kane of Veronica Mars. I'm Danielle, and with me is Mitch.
Well, hello. How are we all doing today? I think that these episodes prove that I am a half-psychic, I would say. Wouldn't you guys?
I think Ariana would. I think at this point she's kind of bowing down to you a little bit.
Yeah, she's really happy that I'm getting everything right that I am. And I think it's funny because, I mean, I think that some people out there are probably listening in and they're like, okay, literally he's watched the episodes before and he's just trying to look really smart. But I think there's proof that I'm not, because I am still like half right on these things. And my theories are a little bit too elaborate to come up with. And they deviate a little bit too much from the story to have seen the episodes before, if that made sense. Come on, guys. I'm legit. I'm like a half psychic.
Mitch, you are legit. And we also have Karen with us this week. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I'm so excited to be here because I wasn't on for the last two episodes. So I apologize for probably everything that I'm going to say that's already been said. But I'm really excited.
Don't apologize at all. I'm excited to have you here.
No worries, Karen. Trust me. There are still many things to discover in the Veronica Mars world.
So many things. So many things to talk about. So excited.
Especially after these two episodes.
Yes.
I know. I know. And I'm happy that I wasn't crazy.
No.
It makes me really excited.
No, congratulations on not being crazy.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome very much. All right. So I'm assuming we're kind of jump in and getting ready to go. So I will just jump into a quick synopsis of episode 5. So it was titled, So You Think You Know Somebody. Basically what happens in this episode is Troy goes down to Tijuana with Logan and Luke. But when Troy's car gets stolen back in San Diego after they're coming back from Tijuana, Veronica has to come and rescue them. She offers to help track down the car before Troy's dad finds out and sends him to boarding school in Albuquerque. But the stakes are raised when Luke tells Veronica that he was smuggling steroids inside of a pinata that was left in Troy's car. So Veronica finds out from Weevil's uncle that the car was chopped and that the pinata was given away for a little girl's birthday party. So Veronica and Weevil rush over to the party, but when the kids burst open the pinata, Veronica discovers that it was just full of candy and not steroids. Realizing that the drugs are lost, she corners Luke the next day and tells him that he needs to find a way to get the money to pay back Hank, the guy who gave him money for the steroids. After selling his Barry Bonds ball, Luke comes up with the money and Veronica delivers it to the drug dealer with her dog Backup in tow. After he continues to threaten Luke, however, Veronica snaps his picture and sends it to the Border Patrol so that he's arrested the next time he makes a drug run. Keith, Mr. Mars, shares Troy's background with Veronica in a sort of retaliation after Veronica kind of shares Keith's new girlfriend, her background with him. And Veronica corners Troy at the lockers, demanding to know why he kept his drug dealing past a secret. Troy guilts her into feeling paranoid, but it turns out her fears were warranted when she realized that Troy purposefully pretended to misplace the car so that he could steal the drugs and run away with his drug dealing girlfriend, Shauna. Fortunately, Veronica's smart enough, and she figured out what was going on. She found the drugs, and she flushed them down the toilet. So as I said before, Veronica's dad had been dating someone. It turned out to be her high school guidance counselor, which made things a little weird. And then while Veronica was rifling through boxes of her mom's old stuff, she found a key to a safety deposit box where she found photos of herself with target markings. After realizing that Veronica isn't ready for him to start dating yet, Keith breaks up with Rebecca, the girlfriend guidance counselor. In an attempt to contact her mother, Veronica mails several disposable cell phones to her mother's friends, but ends up missing her mother's phone call later that night. Leanne leaves a voice message saying that she will explain everything to Veronica when the time is right. And that is the episode in full. It's a really, really long synopsis. I promise to try to cut it down next time. But yes, so point number one, Mitch, you were right about Troy.
Yay!
He is a sleazebag jerk.
He's a sleazebag jerk. He's not the rapist, but he's a sleazebag jerk.
He is not the rapist, Dad, I can tell you. Karen, how did you feel about Troy throughout the whole 5 episodes? Because, I mean, we have all heard Mitch's take on him, but I want to know what your take was while you were watching it.
Oh, he was totally shady. Like, I definitely was like, okay, this guy's evil. And the really horrible thing is that I had to watch episode 104 like, I literally just watched these episodes. I watched 104, 105, and 106 because I didn't get a chance to watch 104 before. And I was actually starting to be like, oh, maybe this guy's not too bad. Like, he hasn't done anything in a couple of episodes. And then I was like, you know what? No, that's just me getting complacent. I know that he is evil, and he was evil.
You knew better than I did. I totally fell for it the first time I saw it. I don't know why I didn't have any flags going off, but this whole episode took me by surprise the first time I saw it.
Well, I would say I told you so, but I couldn't because you didn't watch it the same time as me, so.
Nope, all I said to you was no comment.
Yes, you did. You gave me a lot of no comments, and I'm glad you did because I could theorize away over there.
It's funny, though, because I definitely knew that Troy was up to something, but I didn't know what. And I actually was caught by surprise that he was involved in the whole drug thing because, like, the one guy, I don't remember his name, but the friend who was, like, actually trafficking the steroids, he was Troy doesn't know anything. And Troy was all like, I definitely don't know anything. And I believed him on that, even though I still didn't trust him. And then when it turned around that, you know, he kind of had this whole elaborate plan set up and he had been in so much trouble before, that was actually really surprising. I didn't think it was going to be to that extent.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how that all comes out at once. I think that was the one thing that I had a little bit of a problem with, is that, like, you kind of know Troy's shady, but then you get everything at once. It's like, here's Troy, here's what you should know about him. And, I mean, you'll never see him again because he road trips somewhere. I don't know where he goes. He just
leaves all of humanity behind.
He does, with Shauna and no money.
Or is he with Shauna? Who knows? Because, I mean, seems like her sugar daddy's a little bit SOL at this point, right?
I guess, but I mean, he does still have the nice car, though,
and lots of, like, saltwater taffy or whatever that was.
Yeah, looks good. I wanted to eat some of that saltwater taffy, though I wasn't sure if there were drugs in it, especially when they were, like, you know, breaking out the pinata. And I was like, oh god, those kids are gonna eat steroids.
I know, that's what I was thinking too.
How mortifying would that be to just see all these needles fall out of a pinata?
Oh, god.
Oh my god. No, it'd be the worst birthday ever.
Well, that would be a very bad birthday, you're right. No, I was even thinking it'd be worse if the kids didn't know if it was steroids and it was like saltwater taffy infused with steroids.
Oh god.
Yeah. My brain went really dark there. And I'm glad Karen said too, so that I don't seem like such a weird person. Yeah, so holy crap, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know. But well, there's a couple questions in there for me.
Sure.
That I don't get a couple things. Like, who was the one to deliberately change out the steroids in there in the pinata for the kids' party? Like, did we see that? Is that not important? Is that just someone of Weevil's uncle's company that did that? I mean,
in the pinata?
Yeah.
What happened was when they were at that rest stop in San Diego on their way back from Tijuana, Troy leaves the Luke and Logan for a while. He says he's, like, going to the bathroom, but he knows that the pinata is in the back seat. So what he did was he emptied it then, and he stuffed that bag of steroids in the rafters of the bathroom of that pit stop.
And then Veronica ends up switching out the drugs once again. Basically, she drives down to where she picked them up when the car got stolen.
Right, because she figures out that was the only time that he was alone, was in the bathroom, so that it had to be there. So then
that's a little bit too convenient for her to be able to figure that out.
Yeah,
Too much. I know that's too much. I can't be fooled that much. I'm sorry.
I don't know. She's pretty smart.
Guys, like, think of how many tiles there are in a bathroom ceiling. Think of how many bathrooms he might have stopped off at. What makes her think that he would have stopped at that bathroom? What if he just went to the bathroom?
She picked him up there, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that there are some unknowns that are just, like, you know, stupid little small logistics. And there are things like, how long were they there? Because maybe if they were there for, let's say, I don't know, 3 hours, they would have had a reason to go to the bathroom there. But if they were there for 25 minutes, they wouldn't have. I don't know. To me, it just, like I said, it seemed a little bit too convenient that she was able to do that. But I'll buy it because I know they had to have a way for her to get back at him. And I liked it that she had a way to get back at him. So that's why I'm going to kind of, you know, remain mostly silent on the weird logistics of that.
Yeah. But yeah, so she knew about it. But I also think as much as Troy's like a sleazebag, he was actually pretty clever with everything.
He was a great actor. Like, mm-hmm. I really didn't see it coming until closer to the end, because when he discovers that his car is missing, like, you can just see how much he is freaking out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, here's another question then. Is it really explained that you that the car was stolen by one of Weevil's uncle's gang's members? Like, I don't understand why that car was stolen in the first place. Like, why that one in particular, you know?
Right. I feel like he set it up, and so he paid someone probably to steal it, or like told people where to find it. And then he somehow got his hands back on it. I mean, he obviously was paying off the guy who was driving it, or who had put it back.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Right, so that's how he got the car in the end, because he was paying off someone to fake steal that car.
Right, and then take it to the chop shop, and then maybe someone else, he was paying someone else to go get it from there. Because, like, the person that he had would also have to take out that security system and put it on the dog.
Right. Now I get it now.
Yeah.
I think it makes a little bit more sense when I think of him being the sleazeball that he was, and not the innocent boy whose father's car was stolen, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, he was pretty clever to have all of that set up and to know that she would go after the GPS and have the GPS thing on the dog. And so, like, as much as I don't like Troy, I have to give it to him that he was very clever, but obviously not as clever as Veronica.
No one's ever going to beat at her cleverness, I'll tell you that for a fact.
No comments.
Oh, I hate the no comments. They drive me crazy.
Sorry. I had to throw that one in there. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It was legit. Because I'm sure there's a reason that you said that.
I don't even know. But no comment? Like, I don't know. That's going to be my answer for it.
Defaults to no comment.
So then, before we catch Troy, we see Veronica confronting him about the things that her dad gave her the papers of. So how do we think that her encounter with Troy kind of affects her trust issues? Because, like, she was kind of rebuilding, and now she got kind of knocked down a little bit again.
Yeah, she kind of got reset to zero, I think. You know, she was very untrusting of Troy in the beginning and was very sarcastic, and then she sort of allowed herself to be with him. And you can see, like, after a while, like, she's just smiling all the time, and she's so much happier. And they really had, like, even though it was kind of fake, they had a really good relationship for a while there. And I think now, you know, Veronica just, like I said, she got reset back to zero. And I feel like Veronica kind of doesn't need a guy. Like, you know, a lot of the times we see female characters, we're like, oh, you know, we really want to see her with him because they would be so perfect together. Mm-hmm. And not to say that I don't see Veronica with somebody, because there are a couple people that I think would be really cool if she got with. But
yeah.
But I kind of also feel like she's such a strong character and such a strong woman that it kind of would be cool if she, like, stood on her own.
I agree. Like, it's kind of sad that we automatically, as viewers, like, we're automatically in a zone to sort of ship people. Not that that's ever a bad thing, but, like, to just automatically go there when Veronica is such a strong character. Like, she doesn't need another half because she herself is a whole person.
Yeah, exactly.
So I agree.
And I just wish that she would have realized that she, I mean, this sounds very harsh, but I wish she would have realized that she wasn't the kind of person that needed someone like Troy in her life. And what I mean by someone like Troy is someone that is going to be as obsessive as he was. And regardless of whatever sketchy past he had or anything else, he was too much for her. I think that what I was still saying about him being too controlling and possessive over her was true when he would, you know, do things like manipulate her into going onto a date, which could have come off as flirty, but to me it came off as being too powerful over her, mm-hmm. you know? And in the end of the day, I'm just, you know, very happy that she's done with him. And I want her to stay independent for a while from any love interests, because I think she needs some time, like Karen said, to reset to zero, to learn how to reset to zero, and to just have good friends like Wallace around and you know, just love that she has people in her life that, you know, you don't exactly have to love, like, a relationship. It's platonic. That's okay.
Yeah. I think the thing with Troy was that he was very, very confident. And I think that came off as sort of controlling and manipulative. So I definitely see where you're coming from. I don't really think, like, that was the point, but it was kind of annoying that he was so confident. And he was like, oh, yeah, you're going to come to the party with me. And I was like, really? She's not going to fall for that.
Like, she's too smart to do that. You know what I mean? She's just not the type of person who's going to be like, oh, okay, I'm sure. Like, no matter how much she likes the guy, I don't see her doing that. I really don't. There's no one that can make her go that head over heels.
Yeah, or even, like, as far as she wants to reset, she would never go that far. Like, because that's just not her nature.
But to that effect, I would say she did go past where her nature usually lies with how far she went with Troy. And I know we could talk about her relationship with Troy all day long, and I would feel like I just start reiterating points of the past podcasts where I'd say he's the rapist because of XYZ. But I think that she, like I said, went too far past her character traits to accept sketchy things that he would say or do and controlling things that he would do. You know, that wasn't Veronica to me. That wasn't the strong, independent woman that we got to know.
Yeah,
I agree with that. But I think that Veronica right now is still in a very sort of strange and unknown place. I mean, it's only been like roughly a year since her best friend died, right?
Yeah, just about right. That, because they had that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, she's probably feeling lonely. She doesn't have any of her friends that she had before. She doesn't have her boyfriend. I can sort of see her looking past Troy and his overconfidence and the stuff that might be a little bit of annoying or out of place, and just being like, oh, you know, somebody's actually taking interest in me now. And he's, you know, he shouldn't, because he hangs out with these people that obviously don't like me anymore, but he still came over and sat down and ate lunch with me. So I think that she was just kind of excited over the prospect of somebody taking an interest in her.
Or even like just moving on a little bit.
Right. Trying to.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess to that extent, I can't really blame her. And, you know, to go into any kind of relationship, you really do have to let yourself be vulnerable and understand that you're not going to know everything about the person that you want to from day one, but that you have to kind of test out their personality the best you can in the beginning. And it's really unfortunate that the things she didn't know about him were very large and very deceiving.
Yeah.
But then again, it makes me wonder why in the world he went after Veronica Mars in the first place. It comes back to power, if you ask me. It comes back to him wanting to control the one person he knew was going to catch him in the end of the day. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer, and Veronica Mars is his biggest enemy.
Yeah, that was my next question. Like, what his motivations were, like, what he wanted from her. If it was simply, like, his plan all along to kind of use her smarts to get away with his whole thing. Like, if he was planning this whole Tijuana thing for a while, or I don't know. I mean, there are no answers or anything.
Yeah. My opinion on that is that I think Veronica was just sort of there as a distraction, I guess I want to say, because obviously he has feelings for Shauna and he, you know, is still very much with her. And I think Veronica was just sort of somebody to kind of be with in the interim. And I think that he was attracted to her and he did like her. I mean, I have a lot of trouble thinking that he would pick her in particular to sort of investigate this whole thing and, like, help him get away with it. Because if he knows anything about Veronica Mars, it's that she usually wins at the end of the day. And so I think that maybe he was just a little too overconfident there.
Yeah, good point. I agree with what Karen was saying.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I don't know if I think that he had it planned from the beginning, but I think that once he kind of got to know Veronica, he saw how smart she could be. And so he was like playing at her level, and then he thought he could best her, but then he couldn't. That's kind of where I have always sat on his intentions, I guess.
Yeah, he was playing a game, wasn't he?
Some kind of game, yeah. He picked her, I don't know.
A dirty, rotten scoundrel game. He wanted to basically have it all, I guess, right? Have all the drugs, have all the money, have all the power, and have the woman he desires. He's like Gaston or something from Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, no. Along with, like, not knowing about Troy, at that point in front of the lockers where they're having that discussion, and she had already opened the envelope, should she have opened the envelope that her dad had given her?
Yeah.
You think so? Like, it wasn't, like, the way that her dad reacted when she gave him the envelope, and then he kind of retaliated with that one. I know. I think it's in Veronica Mars's nature to open the envelope. I just don't know if I personally would have.
It's human nature, too. Don't you want to know? It's yeah. like that morbid curiosity. You just, if it's like in front of your face, you even don't want to see, like, I don't even know, like the gory scene in the horror movie, you're going to want to open up your eyes just because you're curious. And I think with this, it's even more personal because it's a relationship she's in.
The thing with that, though, is that if you're in a relationship, you should trust the other person to tell you. I mean, obviously, right. in Troy's case, like, she was right to open the envelope and find out because he was shady and he was definitely up to something. But I think if it had been a character that, you know, didn't have maybe all that stuff in his past or really wasn't up to something, I don't think that she should have opened the envelope. But I think, like you were saying, it is Veronica's nature. And I think that just sort of proves that she isn't ready to be in a relationship because she doesn't have, you know, she still has trust issues.
Yeah, that's another good point, too. Yeah, Karen, you always kind of are good at that, too. You always find one way to find the trump card I did not think of for why a character would do something they did. You know what I mean?
That's good that we're on podcasts together then, though, because it makes for an interesting discussion. That way we don't always agree.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Exactly. Because then that would get boring.
Indeed.
We wouldn't be discussing.
Yes, but no, I agree. It's her trust issues that gave her that reason to do that then. That makes sense.
Right. Any last words about Troy before we put him away?
Forever.
There was...
Spoiler alert, but not really.
Oh, there was something... Oh, I know what it was. Okay, wow. This is something that was Troy and Veronica mixed in with pop culture. So mix those three ideas together, and what do you get? The Postal Service song. That song happened twice in this episode.
Yeah, it did.
Okay, so I don't know if anyone else is a big fan of that song. Mm-hmm. And it's one that is, I don't know, quite frankly, I think it's kind of trippy because it talks about... something about falling down from such great heights and all of that. And it was really unique that played during their love scene in the car, where they were kind of fighting and they were like, you know, still like bickering like a couple would, I'd say, in the with the top down in the car. And then in the scene when he was trying to get away from everyone mm-hmm. with his newfound car to go find his sugar mama, the song was playing again. And I was like, that's ironic.
I didn't even notice. Like, I noticed really? The points when they were like, oh, I really like this song. And I was like, I didn't even hear what the song was. So I have no idea what you're talking about. So I didn't even know that they played it twice.
Well, the thing is like, I'm a super fan of that song to the effect of I've made music videos to that song.
so you like, would know.
I know. Like, they've done that in Teen Wolf, too. Like, an artist like that will show up and no one will notice. And I'll be like, oh, I'm so into that song. And everyone's like, what? That played? I just love when that happens. And it happens in Veronica Mars a lot, too. And it's fun. It's really nice when also, you know, of course, within the nature of the show, Veronica Mars, those songs have a great relation to the scene that's happening. Mm-hmm. And since I'm a big fan of them, I can, like, pick it out. And I'm like, oh, I know something everyone else doesn't.
Yeah, Rod Thomas is really good at that. Like, he picks these really great songs. I think that Postal Service song is probably one of the most... sort of mainstream or like popular songs that we'll hear. So I think if it wasn't that song, I might not have noticed. And even with them pointing it out that it's their favorite song, I might not have noticed. But I did think that was interesting that they played it twice and they played it both with Troy in the car, I guess with both of his ladies, like different ladies.
Right. Yeah. You're getting where I'm coming from.
Yeah. That's it was cool. with his That's ladies. Cool. And maybe like the falling from great heights was referring to him.
I think something. The lyrics go, they won't see us falling from such great heights, That's come true. Down now. Yeah. So I think that means something to the effect of no one will notice the dirty things I'm doing. And that's Troy speaking. And he then is talking to his new girlfriend and the sugar mama. And she's saying, come down now. And then he's actually getting caught. So no, it's not not a very happy song to be set to the trials and tribulations of Troy.
the first instance is like a foreshadowing, and the last one is like, hey, this is what's happening to him, and it sucks.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Basically. But yeah, Troy. And that is all that we know of him. As far as we know, he's still living the drug life with Shauna somewhere.
Shauna. Well, he was pretty rude to Shauna. If I was Shauna, I'd be like, you know what? That was one phone call hang-ups too many. I'm done.
You have no ladies now.
Yes, you get none of my ladies. And she knew that he was cheating on even the sugar mama. I mean, maybe she's cool with that. But she's like, you gave this girl Veronica my number. She's always calling me. I'm like, yeah, I can imagine Veronica sitting there like on the phone like, hi, is this Shauna? I'm calling for et cetera, et cetera. Leave me alone.
She's probably got her Betty voice on when she was calling. That's how I always
imagine. Oh, my God. Her. I have to talk about Kristen Bell because she is so amazing with all of these voices that she does. Like, even, you know, she's got that, like, Irish voice down and the dumb girl blonde voice. And she's so talented. And I just love how Veronica has this, like, all these voices in her back pocket. She just pulls out the one that she needs and they are perfect. They are dead on. She's so convincing. And it's amazing.
We were talking about last week, like, how much we loved her Betty character, or I don't know what they call it. I know later she's a Betty, but like the dumb blonde, like the gamer right. girl. Later she'll pull out like a Southern accent. Like she has so many, and none of them are forced. It's fantastic. Kristen Bell is amazing. I agree.
I think her name was Amber in that episode.
Yes, yeah. That's right. It was
yeah,
Amber.
You're right.
But yeah, no. Kristen Bell is amazing. You can fangirl over her all day long, but we will not do that again. We had enough of that in the last one.
Especially when she tweeted us in the middle of the whole episode.
I was in the same, I knew about it, but you guys were talking about something and then I didn't want to say anything. And then someone brought it up like, oh, Danielle, they tweeted at you. And that's when I did it. Otherwise, I would have just waited.
Oh, we should give relevance to the story because I don't think the listeners heard what happened to Karen. She was doing Not Another Teen Wolf podcast and she was emailed by the executive producer and she was like, I have to wait for them to come to like stop talking so I can really shout this out.
It was so hard.
I understand completely.
I don't know about you, but I like zoned out. I don't even know what like the other two girls were saying because I was like reading the email and I was like, yeah, sorry. This is kind of priority right now.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mitch, but I think I did a lot of uh-huhs and yeah, totally.
And I was probably like, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, yeah. I'm like, yeah right. I totally bought it, I'm sure.
It was hard. It was so hard. Okay, moving on. So let's talk about another sort of plot point. Let's talk about Veronica's mom. And the first thing that I'd like to talk about was Veronica's mom in the flashback when I believe they're making dinner and she's like kind of teasing Veronica about who she's dating. And Veronica says, Duncan, what did you make of her reaction? Or did you notice a reaction? I don't know how noticeable it was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, it was. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Hell to the yeah.
What did you make of that?
That means something to do with Papa Kane and Mama Mars, I'm thinking. Because, I mean, we can't forget her hand was shown outside of the hotel room that she was meeting him in. And like, I think that was the pilot, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. That was the pilot, yes.
So, I mean, maybe it's not sexual. Maybe it's something else. I think sexual will be too much of an easy out. Don't you agree, Karen?
Yeah, actually, I was thinking, like, there's got to be more going on to it. Like, I don't necessarily think that's exactly what's happening. I mean, something shady is happening. And when I saw that reaction, I was like, okay, this has nothing to do with Duncan. I think it has more to do with the fact that it's Duncan Kane, like it's his family. And I also kind of wonder if it has more to do with the mom, because like I'm super suspicious of the mom and I don't trust her at all. So I have a feeling like it's a lot more than like the face value.
Yeah, Mrs. Kane is shady. She's a shady, I don't want to say witch, but she's not very nice. And I think we
I
see that
say
a lot.
Witch, yeah. But which.
But which. Yeah. And I think we see that a lot in these first few episodes. It kind of sets her up, I think, even from the first one, when she asks for Mr. Mars's help, but still does it in like a very witchy way. So
yeah,
I could totally, yeah.
She's very cold. Like, the father is nothing compared to her. Like, I actually kind of like him. I don't mind him too much. He shows emotion, and we see that in the episode where, like, they go to the fountain and stuff, and, like, he actually starts crying and stuff. But the mother, like, she's cold.
Yeah, I think during that scene, she was, like, petrified that they were showing the fun side of Lily or something, while her dad was kind of laughing and crying at the same time. Yeah.
But do we believe him when he says to his son all the time, I want to have you be enthusiastic about something? To me, it comes off as the typical controlling parent, because he still says, and I want you to go to Stanford Law School and graduate first of your class. Because I know this was supposed to be a joke, but it still spoke to me as, I'm going to control your life and you're going to run for the thing that we're going to talk about in our next episode's recap, you know?
Yeah.
I think he's just kind of over-enthusiastic. I mean, it's not a good thing, but I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing either, especially since he only has one child now. He lost Lily, and obviously that's going to have a huge effect on him. So I think, like, he just really, really, really wants the best for Duncan, and it comes off as too much sometimes.
The way that they talk about Mrs. Kane before Lily died, like, they said she was kind of cold, but I also see, like, this post Lily thing. Like, you know, there are different roles that parents can take once they've had a child die. And I think the two parents kind of personify two of those roles. One is very detached, very cold, I guess. And like, they lost a child, and so they're just kind of on their own. They're detached from their other child, while the other one tries to overcompensate a little bit, I guess, with the remaining child. If that makes sense. So they're kind of showing those two different reactions.
And I could also see it as being him trying to live vicariously through his son. Maybe he didn't get done as much as he wanted to in his life. And even I can see that in myself, because I feel like if I was to ever have children, I would run the risk of trying to live vicariously through my children. Because, for instance, I always wanted to do gymnastics when I was a kid. Thank God my mom didn't let me do it, because I would have had growth plate injuries out to wazoo. But still, for some twisted reason, I want my children to know that they can go and do gymnastics when they're younger. And I hope that they want to, because I would like to think I wouldn't push them toward it, but I can see where that ambition inside of me to live through them would come through.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a weird, insidious material that basically makes you feel like you're doing the right thing when you're kind of destroying the hopes and dreams of someone else, you know?
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And I think it does come off as controlling, but then you also see the sensitive side. So it's really hard to kind of tell how Jake Kane is dealing with this, or how what his motivations are at this point.
But at least he's not as bad as another father that we're going to see in this show.
Mr. Mars?
Oh, no.
Thinking back to that conversation that we had. Other father. Oh, yes.
No. Because as far as fathers go, I'd like to say Mr. Mars is still my favorite father on the show, regardless of the flaws of him letting his daughter do a little bit too much. But we got a lot of great feedback about why he was allowing his daughter to do as much as he was, that, you know, kind of swayed me a little bit more toward the he's doing the best he can situation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I know what father you're talking about now. It took me a little bit to get there, but I got there. And we will get to him. Definitely.
I know. It's so hard not to talk about all of the father points that I want to talk about, because as much as this episode has a lot to deal with fathers, the next episode has even more to do with fathers. And it's a large climax in the father stories that we're seeing, I'd say.
It is. And we'll probably get there in, like, I don't know. We'll get there.
It's like I'm in a car ride. Are we there yet? Are we there?
not yet. Let's finish up with Leanne Mars. So any, I guess, predictions as of what we've seen within the last few episodes and with this one, and what's going on with Veronica's mom, as far as like being heartless or secrets or anything like that?
I've already channeled half of my future self, and that half predicted that there's going to be something different than what we see on the face. It's not going to be sexual, what she's doing with Mr. Kane. And that's the most that my half-ohm future self can tell. That's it. I've connected with my Zen, and that's all it's given you today. Because now I'm up to high standards. Because everyone really expects me to know what I'm talking about. And I'm like,
You're half psychic, so you should know.
I'm half psychic. I'm like Trelawney, you know, like Harry Potter. I can only try so hard.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot going on with Veronica's mother. I don't know what it is yet. I'm still very confused about that. And I don't think she's heartless. I think that there's a very, very good reason why she left. And I really, truly believe that her leaving was probably one of the hardest things that she's ever done. And I think that it's going to take a while for us to figure out what that is. And I'll be really interested to know. But yeah, as for right now, I have no idea. I'm totally clueless.
Fair enough. Let's move on then to Veronica's dad, since we're kind of hitting on all the parents. And this is very parent heavy, like Mitch said. Do you think that Veronica was being selfish about her dad dating her guidance counselor? Or do you think she should have handled that in a different way? Or was it still kind of weird in general?
That's rough, isn't it, Karen? That's hard.
Yeah, I'm very, very much on the fence about this. Because on the one side, you know, I think that it is a little selfish. You can obviously see that she's still, you know, she still wants her mother. She still misses her mother. She tries to push that feeling away, but she can't do it all the time. And so she doesn't want her dad dating because, you know, her dad and her mom are still technically married and she wants that happy family back. And I think that, you know, at the same time, like, they're split up. It's been a year. And I think that he's a grown man, and if he's ready to move on, that's sort of up to him. I can understand her struggling with that, but, you know, it's kind of his decision. It's his life, it's his love life, and he kind of has a right to take a stand on that.
Yeah, I'm a lot where Karen is, because I can see how she wouldn't want to move on from having her father and her mother together, but you would think to a certain extent she would try and let her father be happy. I'm sad that Veronica didn't want her father to be happy, because I could see him and the guidance counselor working out really, really well, because they were great communicators. And I love that moment when they're in the, you know, whatever diner, and they're kind of, you know, schnoozing up to each other. And then he's being a little bit distant and cold. She asks him what's wrong, that can't stand these furrowed brows, etc. And then he's like, well, she's like, just rip off the band-aid, tell me. And he's like, oh, I can't date you anymore. I was like, you know what? That's the kind of relationship that can work, because they know that there's really nothing you can hide from the other and still have like a healthy relationship, you know? And that's why I'm really sad that they didn't continue on.
Yeah, definitely. Because they were so good together. And I loved that moment when Veronica brought in that paper to him and was like, look, she's still married. And she wrote, like, you know, these bad checks and stuff. And he was like, I knew all of that. She was 21 when she did the checks. And technically, I'm still married. And, you know, on the one hand, I really, really see why Veronica was, like, trying to protect her father, because they have that sort of equal relationship. Sometimes I almost kind of forget that Veronica's still a kid. You know, she's still in high school, because she's so adult-like. And in some ways, she really does take care of her father. But at the same time, like I was saying before, he kind of has the right to take a stand on his own life and decide what's good and not good for himself.
Second to that, I agree, Karen. She acts very much like an adult, and it shocks me that I am able to be fooled so often when she's doing bad things that I always complain about, like where she's pretending to be someone, you know, and she's like in an office and she's like, I'm the intern for etc., etc. And I believe her. I'm like, yeah, you look like you're an adult. You look like you could be 25.
She's like the smallest person ever.
I know. She's just so cute and adorable and convincing. And I find myself talking on the phone nowadays and I'm like, how would Veronica convince this person to do what I want them to do?
Good. Yes.
It's crazy. It's like she's invading my life. It's completely insane.
Welcome to the club.
I'm a marshmallow.
You're a marshmallow.
We need, like, what would Veronica do bumper stickers.
I'd totally have that. That'd be cool.
I would be on board for that. I agree with you about Mr. Mars deserving to move on. But to kind of play a devil's advocate or throw a wrench in there, he was being really secretive about what was happening with his wife. Like, he wouldn't tell Veronica anything. He knew where the mom was, and he told Veronica, well, maybe I don't want to go after her. And so that kind of leaves it in a place where you know that he's hiding something. And I mean, I love Mr. Mars, but that kind of puts him in a questionable light when it comes to Veronica being selfish about her dad dating. Because with him not disclosing everything, it's not closing the door on that marriage, if that makes sense.
Right. No, yeah. Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah, Veronica needs closure. She needs that. That's something she deserves.
Yeah, like if it's something that the mom did, or like he should just tell her, and then she could probably get closure. Because right now, because he's not telling her everything, that's why she's trying to track her down. And that's why she's gotten as far as she has.
Right. So. No, I agree with that, because I feel like he knows something that he's not telling her. So because of that, he sort of has this closure and ability to move on. And it's really unfair that he's not telling Veronica. You know, he should, because that's like a huge open wound for her right now. And maybe it's him being selfish. Maybe it's him being protective. But I don't think it's having, you know, a positive influence on his daughter.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's exactly, you worded it a lot better than I did. But yeah, that's exactly where I kind of stand with that. It's like, yes, I believe he should. And I believe that they were a pretty good couple, because like you said, they were communicating well. But then on the other hand, he was being a little shady with it. So I don't know, just something to think about. Mr. Mars will be here, and we'll see ladies in and out sometimes. So it's just something to keep in your back pocket, I guess. So I think we pretty much hit on everything for this episode. Is there anything else that anybody wanted to bring up?
Well, other than the fact that Troy will never be seen again, which is something I'm going to rejoice over. But then again, I doubt that the guidance counselor will be seen again, something that I'm going to be very sad over. And that also, in general, this was a very intense storyline. Mm-hmm. And I am impressed with, once again, where the dark depths of Veronica Mars reach. And I think that the darkest depth was where she brought back up to the I pick things up and put them down steroid man and took his picture and sent it to Border Patrol. That was smart of her. That was deep and dark of her. And I'm glad that she did that. And that was cool. But that was just such a dangerous situation for her to put herself in. Not any more dangerous than anything else she's really done. But that was just beyond anything I could imagine a 17-year-old even thinking of doing, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't even do that right now.
Me neither. I never could.
It wasn't dangerous. She had backup.
True.
I mean, backup is a pretty good backup. I just love that his name is Backup. It completes everything on the show.
It does.
He's the best. I love Backup.
And I was about to say where Backup really is at her home. I usually don't remember him around, but I'll forgive them now because the guidance counselor was like cooking some mush dinner, and she was like getting attacked by him, and she was like trying to like cook pasta, and then she like dropped the bowl or something, right? I think they kind of just like know that you can only use an animal for like, I don't know, a certain amount of hours on set. So they're probably just like, we're only going to have like one or two backup scenes this episode, but at least he's in this one.
Yeah. It's like, they kind of, you're just, I guess, supposed to assume he's sleeping because they kind of forget about him a lot.
Karen, it's absolutely like the dogs that Lydia has on Team Wolf.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Oh, have we seen Prada recently? I don't think we've seen Prada at all in season 3.
No, we have not. See, dogs on TV shows that don't show up do tend to bother me, so I'm glad that I'm not the only one that's noticing these things. And Backup is still skating on by, but I don't want it to become like that dog on Lost that just decided to like show up in different time zones and whatever it felt like. It was like, oh, it's 1960? Lol, I'm still hanging out. And I was like, what? But that's a whole other can of worms.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I don't even know. I watched like an episode of Lost, so I don't know much.
Me neither.
Good. We're on the same page.
You guys, I would say rewatchable 3, but I don't know if our brains could handle Lost. I mean,
it's so stressful.
It's a very stressful show. It really
That's
is.
That's what I've heard.
It's very, oh God, it'll drive you crazy. It really will. If you think Veronica Mars, things like in Veronica Mars, like, wait, what was she doing with that tube? How did she ruin the hard drives inside of that safe? We were all...
Oh, let's not get started on that again.
I know, because I know
we don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
Because I know we don't know that answer, and we never will. But imagine that with Lost every episode, and imagine never getting those answers. Never, ever getting those answers that you want. We would all go crazy as a rewatchable podcast doing Lost because we analyze things like how she ruins hard drives a lot. So let's just say we're safe sticking with shows that leave us hanging as much as Veronica Mars does, and that's probably the limit.
Count my lucky stars on that one.
Yes, please.
I couldn't handle anything more.
Ugh. Be still, my fandom heart.
Oh, goodness. I guess my last thought for the episode, I put it down here. Did anyone else think that it was ironic that Luke was trying to sell a Barry Bonds signed ball in order to compensate for losing steroids?
Oh my God, I just realized. Holy crap, that's funny.
I didn't realize it the first time or even the second time I watched it, but this last time when I saw this episode, immediately, for some reason, I was like, oh my God.
I have no idea what this means, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry. Barry Bonds is a baseball player who has been involved in a steroid scandal for a very long time.
That's so much more funny now that I understand that reference.
Yes. I honestly don't know if he was ever convicted. I only follow my Chicago White Sox, and that was recently when I started. So I don't know if he's ever been actually convicted of anything. I don't think he was, but if you Google Barry Bonds and it finishes it for you, one of the first things that comes up, I believe, is steroids.
Of course. That's one of the biggest controversies with him. I'm sure if you Google Elvis, it would be like died on a toilet. You know what I mean? Abducted by aliens or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So I was just watching it and I thought that was hilarious that he was trying to sell his Barry Bonds ball. He's like, this is going to be worth a lot of money someday. I was like, maybe not. So that was my final 2 cents on that episode. Anything else?
That was pretty much all I could really think of, other than the fact that it was Veronica's dad's birthday and it was a nice question mark on the candle as opposed to the actual age. I was like, yes, that needs to happen more often in life.
So clever.
It is, because it's kind of like a clever thing for the show to do, because they're just going to cause themselves a headache if they add in an age and they're like, ooh, wow. Yeah, that timeline doesn't work out that well anymore. So, I mean, this way you can just avoid a lot of plot holes. And it's just cute, because it's just like, it's almost lampshading to a certain effect, you know? It's funny, it's funny. And like I said, it should be done more in real life, because, in the end of the day, age will be just a number when we all reach, I don't know, 30, and we stop getting fun things when we're 20 and all. And once we're there, I mean, who cares? It's a question mark. I mean, whatever.
That's so sad.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's not, supposed to be sad. It's supposed to be that we're all kind of on the equal playing ground.
Yeah,
That, you know, the difference of 5 years really doesn't really matter between a 30 and a 35-year-old, for instance, you know. That's what that was supposed to comment on. And I wanted that cake. I really wanted it. Lopsided and all. I really wanted that cake.
All of it. Just eat all of it. I want to celebrate a birthday with the Mars family.
Oh, that'd be so cute. That'd be so cute.
It's so fun.
It really would be.
All right. Let's move on then to our favorite scenes and our favorite lines of this episode. Let's start with scenes. Mine was just the confrontation between Veronica and Troy in front of the lockers. I just thought it was interesting, how fast the relationship dynamics kind of switched or changed. So that scene really sticks out in my mind every time I watch that episode or think about it.
That was a really interesting scene, because I think that was honestly the scene where I was like, oh, you know, okay, maybe Troy has done some bad things in his past, but perhaps he feels bad about them, and maybe he is trying to turn over a new leaf. And then, you know, that little nagging voice in my head was like, don't believe him. But it was interesting to kind of have Veronica look like the bad guy there and Troy look like the good guy, because he had a very valid point.
Yeah, he definitely did. And it was, I felt like I was going back and forth between the two characters, like trying to take a side, but I couldn't. That's why I really liked that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And it was really cool to see how she starts off the scene normal. She's like, hi, how you doing? And he's like talking about the kisses it would take to remove all the troubles. And then she's like, oh, my lips would fall off if I had to keep on kissing you to remove all of your issues. And I was like, yeah, girl power.
She's not very subtle, is she?
No.
Who the hell has time to be subtle? I love Veronica. Holy crap. She's my soulmate.
Yes.
Right? Like, I mean, yes. To that effect, she's great. She's I don't like how she's doing all that lying and stealing and cheating, but she's just so upfront with people, and maybe she's not as nice as she should be sometimes, but she will just say her first judgment right out there and just get it out there and let it be done with. That's it. Done. No drama. Well, maybe there's drama, but there's no drama over figuring out what everyone's
not
thinking.
On her end. Yeah, not on her end. Karen, your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was after they got back from Tijuana and everybody's in the car and Logan jumps out and he says, thanks for the ride. This means you're going to play nice now. And Veronica says, walk in front of the car. We'll see. And I loved this scene because they were totally flirting. It was not the same vindictiveness that they've had towards each other before. It was actually that sort of play fight sarcastic relationship that they had back when like they were all friends and Lily was alive and stuff. And I really loved that little snippet of normalcy between them. It was really cool.
Good point. And yeah, I can see that ship. No comment, Danielle. I'm gonna say the no comment for you. No comment. But I can see that ship, Karen. And that's a new ship I never thought of on this show. And I kind of, I think I ship it, if I had a percentage of how much I shipped it, I'd ship that approximately 67%.
So random.
Oh, so my scene, all right. I did the Troy finding out he was discovered by Veronica scene, which we talked about ad nauseum, because it's just so funny how he's finding out all the things that she did, and he's like opening up and he's finding the saltwater taffy out of the bag that he thought was the drugs. And the girl's like, why is this girl Veronica calling me? I was just like, you go Veronica, you get him.
I loved girl. That scene because I was so confused though, because when he first opened up the bag, I was like, wait, is he going to like swallow all the steroids so that like, or like throw them out the window so they're not discovered? And then I was like, oh, she duped him. Okay. I get this now.
Well, what I was thinking was, see, I was right. The saltwater taffy from the kid's pinata at the birthday party was steroids. And that's what he has right now. There's still steroids. It's like a...
No, I don't think so.
No, I know it's not. No, that was just like my crazy brain going insane for a minute. I was like, oh my God, the saltwater taffy is steroids. Holy crap.
God. That's too much thinking.
But that was just ironic because Veronica had seen that the saltwater taffy was replaced with the original pinata. So she was like...
Is it really?
Right. What? Wait, what was that, Karen?
I didn't notice that. I assumed it was candy. And I guess I really never looked at the candy, but I didn't realize they were both saltwater taffy.
Well, because it had to have been someone that was either close to Troy or Troy himself that replaced the steroids with the saltwater taffy before the pinata was open at the birthday party. And so that's why Veronica was like, well, you thought you were really smart doing that? Well, here you go.
I just learned something new. Thank you very much for that. I never noticed that it was the same candy.
That's rewatchable for y'all.
Even us super fans learning something new. I like it. Favorite lines. Mine is, dude, where's your car?
I'm no Ashton Kutcher.
It was just so good. So good. And I think that was probably around the time of Dude, Where's Your Car? So it probably would have been even funnier.
We have younger listeners who don't know that movie.
I know. You don't need to see it. You really don't.
No, you really don't.
It was Ashton Kutcher. It was like The Hangover, but worse.
Yep.
I think we can equate it to The Hangover, sort of.
No, yeah, it's totally The Hangover. Are you kidding me?
Because they can't remember what they did, and they got, like, tattoos or...
Oh, my God. There's one horrible scene... I don't even know if I want to detail it. Okay, I'm not even going to. Just don't watch this movie.
Don't do it. It's not worth your time.
I can explain it to you guys in a very vague way, so people who have seen it, maybe on this podcast and outside of it, will know what I'm talking about.
Or you can tweet us.
I'll give a really vague reference.
Go for it.
They have trouble walking after a certain scene. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No. Okay. Done.
Done. Done. Karen, Karen, what's your favorite?
Please, Karen, go.
Okay. Favorite line was when Veronica... No, sorry. It was when Keith said, "Ever notice how everything you make tends to lean a little to the left?" I loved that scene. I can't even express how much I love their relationship. It is so good. I mean, yeah, it has its flaws, but I think that's what makes it normal. And it was just that line that honestly doesn't even mean anything that sort of is just this, it just kind of shows their relationship. And it was just such a sweet and funny line. And I loved how the cake really did lean to the left. And Veronica was like, "Oh yeah, I totally did that on purpose."
It's just endearing. I think their relationship is up there with me with, like, Rory and Lorelai Gilmore.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're pretty much on par for, like, my favorite parent-kid relationship.
And yeah. I
love it. And I love that line because it leans a little to the left. I love it.
I've heard that a lot, actually, that they're very similar to Lorelai and, yeah, and her daughter.
They really are. They have, like, the same kind of – well, not the same, but they have – they banter and they're on each other's like intellectual levels and they treat each other as equals. It's really great. I like it a lot.
So guys, I saw an excellent BuzzFeed drink every time you etc. for Gilmore Girls. It relates a lot to Veronica Mars's world, I think. And it'd be funny if someone made one for Veronica Mars. And I think that a lot of them would relate like, I don't know, like, one of them was like, every time Rory pitches a story to her school newspaper, and I was like, "Oh, that's Veronica." And it was like, every time Rory and Lorelai get along or something, I don't know. But it was just really funny now because I'm making a connection. Like, you know what? To play even a drinking game between Gilmore Girls and Veronica Mars, you'd find a lot of similarities. Just change around the names.
I would love to do that. I think it'd be fun. Drink every time Wallace says something snarky.
Yes. All right, so my favorite quote is, I'll try and do a good Troy impression. Let's see how I do. "What do I love more, that you have a buddy named Earl or that he works at the impound yard?" You can do Veronica. Here, go ahead, Danielle.
I'm guessing both.
It's so cute. I love it. I love it. I love your, well, I love your impression and I love the quote too. It's cute because she is just so quick-witted enough to pick it up to be like, "Yeah, I'm kind of BA. Whatever. Suck it."
No, she's cool. I like it when they're Weevil and I think it's his uncle. They're speaking to each other in Spanish. And then he later goes to translate it for Veronica and she just cuts him off like automatically and tells him what he already says.
She's like, yeah. The ticket's coming and I have to go to the birthday party. Okay, where are we going next?
It's great.
Yeah, I was like, oh, she knows a fluent amount of Spanish, I suppose.
She knows everything.
She really does. I won't go as far as to say she's the Dumbledore of the series. I tend to go Dumbledore whenever I think of a character that knows everything.
Knows everything.
She's not quite there, but she's on a track, on the good track to be there.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right. Well, I think that is done with episode 5, So You Think You Know Somebody. Are you ready to move on to episode 6?
Yes. I have so much to say about this episode. So much.
Let's go. Okay. I'm going to try to cut the synopsis down as much as I can because it's really long. So episode 6, Return of the Cane. Basically what happens is there's this character, Wanda Varner. She's a former cheerleader who wants to overturn the O-Niner aristocracy by running for president and undoing the exclusive pirate points. Obviously the O-Niners don't like her because they love their pirate points and they submit Duncan as presidential candidate against his will. He technically wins by a landslide vote, but Veronica's suspicious about the voting and ends up challenging it. And so she and Wallace end up running everything and find out that the voting system, it was biased towards Duncan. At one point, we are told to question Rhonda, as some people call her a narc. And so Veronica tests it out. It finds out that Wanda is a narc. In order to try to clear her own record, Wanda turns in other people when it comes to drugs and stuff because she really wants to get in college. So she's a narc. What else?
Should we explain what that is to people who might not know?
Oh, I'm sorry. A narc is someone who is, I don't want to say a tattletale because I feel like drugs are a lot more important than other things that people would tattle on. But basically, a narc is someone who's kind of undercover and they turn people in for being involved with drugs or any illegal activity. They're kind of like a spy sort of ish, but not as cool as a spy.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that was a really roundabout explanation, but that's pretty much it.
Had to look that up, by the way, when I saw the episode, because I was like, I have no idea what this means. I'm not even going to tell you what I thought it meant, because it was just way off.
Oh, no, you have to. Tell us.
I think I was getting it mixed up with another word that has to do with sexual exploitations with people that are not alive anymore.
Oh, no.
I was so confused, you guys.
Oh, God.
That's terrible.
Come on, Karen. This isn't Twilight.
Oh, no.
Oh, my face is burning now, you guys. Thanks.
Sorry. It's okay. I feel like narc was a really 90s thing, like early 2000s thing to say. So, I mean, I understand. I didn't come across it very much. So, it's okay. All right. It is definitely not what you were thinking. And I'm sorry that you went that far.
I was like, wow, this episode got really dark all of a sudden.
Really controversial, really fast. Oh, no. Oh. All right. The really juicy storyline for this episode had to do with Logan. Basically, he's kind of bored. And so he just comes up with the idea that he should run an amateur boxing ring featuring desperate homeless men.
Naturally.
I mean, as one does.
Yes, of course.
As these things progress, usually, he gets found out. The media finds out because his dad is actually a really big movie star. If I had to compare him to someone, I would think he would be on the level of, like, maybe Tom Cruise.
Harrison Ford, even. All the guys, yeah.
He's a very big movie star. And so, of course, the media catches wind of it. So then Aaron Eccles, his dad, forces Logan to do a press conference while he serves food at a local soup kitchen. But after hearing his father brag about an 8-figure paycheck for his next movie, Logan makes the bold move to announce to the press that his father will donate $500,000 to the homeless shelter. Logan ends up paying for this bold gesture as we see his father use a belt to whip him, and we realize that Logan's fairy tale home life is definitely more like a nightmare. And then having to deal with the whole arc of the show, Veronica discovers a crime scene photo of Lily's shoes that were in Lily's room the night Lily was murdered. And they directly contradict later evidence that they were found in Abel Koontz's boat. So that's kind of where the episode leaves us with the overarching mystery and with everything that's going on with the O-Niners and the class. We have the class clashes again. So let's start out with the election. Did you care about it, or was it just kind of a boring plot point that didn't do as well in setting up the class distinctions as maybe episode 2 did?
Karen, I think that depends on if we got excited about our own class elections in high school. Did you get into those?
No, not at all. But I will say that in this episode, I actually really did care about the election because for a couple of different reasons. I think that one of my favorite things about Veronica Mars is that the mysteries that she solves are very relevant to her and her life, because it's not like every day somebody's missing or somebody's getting murdered, which after, you know, a while seems really contrived. This is like, oh, you know, who stuffed the ballot boxes and, you know, who did this gamer, like, what did this gamer person do and stuff like that. And it's just so relevant that it's so realistic. And I really, really enjoy that about the show. And the other thing was that I thought this brought out a lot more about Duncan and his personality. And I think as far as like his characteristics and stuff, we learned a lot more about him in this episode.
Yeah, he really takes center stage in this one. And I agree. I did enjoy this election episode. I mean, it was okay in doing things with the class, but I think that its main purpose was showing Duncan and how he fits in with the O-Niners, but also he's very different because you get that flashback where he's very nice to that stereotypical kid that people are mean to during lunch and telling him to move.
Which was horrible. That was horrible.
It was horrible.
I loved that scene, though, where he was like, dude, you're okay. You can find somewhere else to sit. I was like, I love you so much, Duncan Kane.
Yes. So for I think that this episode was really good in giving us more of an idea of Duncan beyond just the kid who's taking depression medication or antidepressant medication.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I literally couldn't even imagine doing that to a real person. And the fact that that typical blonde surfer dude who tends to just show up and cause trouble was...
Dick. His name is Dick.
His name is Dick? Oh, you're kidding me.
His name is Dick.
His name is Dick.
Yep. He's the, are you talking about the guy who's like buddies with Logan and does the Fight Club with him too?
Absolutely.
Yes. His name is Dick.
Well, we sure know what name I want to call Dick, don't we? Yeah. So, well, that's kind of fun. I like to say they did that on purpose.
Fun fact.
That's like a Wiki effect. I don't even, they probably like mention it in passing. It was probably like Logan, like, hey, yeah, Dick, I'll pick you up at school tomorrow. Yeah.
I think it was something. I think they introduced him like that. Yeah.
Oh, you're
kidding
me.
Actually, fun fact. Dick was in episode 2, and his first line was Logan. Just saying Logan. So
that's
like.
It?
Logan says like his name, and he just says Logan's name. Like that's all he was there for was to say Logan's name.
I wonder if he got credited for that.
I don't know, but anyway. I'm sorry. Keep going.
I couldn't imagine being I couldn't imagine being Dick and doing that to someone because I would go home and I would think of how horrible that was, no matter what life I had, that I'd made someone feel that uncomfortable, and it's just not the right way to treat people. And I would think he would feel even worse that Duncan would have stood up to him, because basically Dick was doing it, you know, to make it so that his friends would be like, oh, you're so cool. You make fun of the stupid kids. But, you know, if your friend is even seeing what you're doing is wrong, that seems to me like it's going to hurt more than a stranger, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
You could tell he was kind of wounded after that.
As it should have been, and that's probably the only answer character development we're going to get for Dick, if I had to predict, but maybe he is, it's going into spoiler territory, so I will be very vague. Danielle knows what I'm talking about, and the listeners will too, if they know the season 3 DVD box. I'll stop there. That's it.
Saw the season 3 DVD box.
That's it. That's all I'll say. I won't say anymore.
Okay, so you know. Okay.
I don't know anything. I know barely anything.
No, you don't. But this you know the season 3 box.
Consider this half prediction, like half future telling Mitch, half I almost spoiled myself from looking at the season 3 DVD box, but I'm not really sure what I saw.
Half cheating, Mitch.
It's half cheating, I'll admit. It was accidental cheating. It really was.
No comments.
No, thank you for no comments. I agree. This is a no comment zone for me too. I'm going to not comment because I just would tell everyone to not look at the DVD boxes. And I'm glad that I looked at it as short as I did. But some subconscious part of my brain is saying something spoilery, and I'm not going to say it because I don't think it's a prediction. I think it's the truth.
No comment. Okay.
Okay. No comment. We're moving on.
Let's keep going. Anything more about this election? Or just like the politics in it, or Duncan.
It was funny when who was there? Awanda. She had her video show up, and she was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna stick it to the man."
Well, she used to be a cheerleader, you know.
Hmm?
She used to be a cheerleader, you know.
You could tell she was very peppy, really into that, and. I don't know if you considered this part of the election per se, but when Veronica and Wanda are in Veronica's bedroom, a very important scene happens because they're sitting there painting their toenails, etc., doing their girly little "oh, I'm a teenage girl" thing, whatever. And then they have a serious conversation where Wanda's listing off all of these schools that she is asking Veronica if she'll go to. She's like, the Ivy League, the baby Ivies. I'm like, wait, what's a baby Ivy? I've never heard of that. And Veronica is basically like, you know what? I'm with you, Wanda. We're both going to have to, you know, like, quote, rob a bank and ace our SATs to get in there. And it demonstrated to me that Veronica was potentially going to be great friends with Wanda, and I'm really sad that Wanda had to go and narc her out, even though we'll talk about that later and there's more to that. But I'm sad in the end of the day that her and Wanda couldn't have been friends, because that scene showed to me that Veronica would have a good girlfriend who could relate to not even just like her life struggles, but, you know, something like her financial struggles or her class struggles, you know?
Yeah, she's not just relating to some other cheerleader or something.
Oh, can we please talk about the main cheerleader?
Oh, yes. Was that Madison?
Madison?
I think it was Madison St. Clair. Yep.
Madison St. Clair and her teacher, Jane Lynch from Glee. Hello.
Yes. Oh, my God. I was like, what is Sue Sylvester doing here?
Hello.
And you know what? I think I was, like, making this mental connection that I just realized that, like, Kitty from Glee, I kept thinking that Madison, I was like, oh, she's Kitty. Like, you know, they're very similar, actually.
They really are. That's funny. Yeah, Jane Lynch is good at playing, like, that condescending teacher role, isn't she?
Yeah, she was definitely playing Sue Sylvester in this one before she even started playing Sue Sylvester. Like,
I could not take her seriously, though. Like, no, I kept expecting for her to, like, yell something outrageous.
Or make, like, some sort of, not derogatory joke, but, you know, the jokes that she makes to, like, put the kids down, but they're so hilarious. I was expecting,
like, how she always calls Kurt, like, what's up, porcelain?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Like, she would go to Veronica and she'd be like, what's up, Judy Blume?
Yes.
Or, like, Nancy Drew or whatever.
Any one of those. Harriet the Spy.
Right, Harriet the Spy.
Too old, maybe? I don't know.
No, I love Harriet the Spy.
Harriet the Spy is very legit.
Okay, good.
Sometimes I wish, okay, this is just a rewatchable wish. I know that Lost is, like, a far-off fantasy, but here's a wish that maybe you guys can make come true, just for me. One day where we go through and we find, like, movies related to our TV show, not exactly directed at it, but of the same era, and that are kind of in the same vein as it, because you know that there's always, like, a certain trend in the media whenever a TV show or a movie's going on, and I think that there was a large trend toward that really cool, super sleuthing young chick, and that the Harriet the Spy was a lot like that. So if I had one wish, and if we ever had a filler episode we just had to do, I would love to do Harriet the Spy commentary. That would just make my life. It would just feel great. It would just feel so organic to the show.
And if we were going into more sleuthing things, may I suggest a few DCOMs?
DCOMs, I am well versed in those
by now.
That's true.
Throw a few in there, you know.
Well, if you had to pick one, Get a Clue, right? It's probably.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, was Get a Clue. I love that movie. I would sing that song all the time.
Get a Clue.
Exactly.
Yeah, guys, there's a lot of really great movies. If you like Veronica Mars, I'd say, Harriet the Spy and Get a Clue are good ones to start off on. And it's really fun seeing Lindsay Lohan in Get a Clue, too, because she was so cute back then. I loved it. It was great. And
she was believable.
She was believable. Yeah, and you know what? She almost has a Veronica Mars quality to her in that show, I'd say, because of her integrity to just find out what she's going to find out. She's the outcast from society and, you know, all that. It was fun. It's really good time. Check that out, guys, if you like Veronica Mars, because I don't think we're going to fit in a commentary. Like I said, it's a wish, not a fantasy, but a wish. So
I think we have a pretty packed schedule.
We have a very packed schedule because we're going to barely finish in time right before Veronica Mars, the movie, comes into theaters. So that's my female Nancy Drew movie recommendation.
Good. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
No problem.
Let's see. Let's talk about Wanda a little bit more. Before we were talking about how she and Veronica are similar in their financial situations and all the things that they would have to do in order to get into their dream schools. So that being said, was she wrong in turning in Veronica? Or was it considered more wrong because she was kind of being a hypocrite, sort of, to save her own skin? Like, if it wasn't Veronica, would we be behind Wanda?
See, this actually kind of confused me. I don't necessarily have an answer for this because I totally get why Veronica chose to vote for Duncan. And honestly, I think I would have too, just because that flashback really, really sold me. But why did Wanda turning in Veronica make her not a legitimate, like, candidate for the school election?
Wanda was being slandered with Narc being written like on her car, and I believe it was on her locker as well. And so it was kind of known in the school that she was this person who would turn on you. So I guess it was a way of showing that she wasn't a trustworthy person, which in an election is not the greatest quality a person can have if they're looking to win. That's right. How I saw it.
So it was less about like the drug aspect about it and more like a personality trait of her not necessarily like she would like stab her friends in the back.
Right.
Yes. Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
But to a certain extent, I think that there is an underlying tone of Veronica's, you know, foil here, because she is the one that always goes about and finds out whatever information she wants about anyone and does whatever she can to bring them down. And if you want a direct example of her doing something even related to drugs, it's, you know, the Logan situation where she planted a bong in his locker, you know? So for her to be angry that her friend was really a narc doesn't really connect well with me, because she did that Logan situation and because she is, you know, always acting like Wanda. She's always undercover looking for more things about other people. So it's just very strange to me that that affected her as much as it did. And that was the large plot point that drew them apart. But Danielle, I have a question for you as a super fan. The write-offs for the one episode characters are starting to bother me, starting with Wanda. I haven't seen any more episodes past that, but if I have a trend where these unbelievable stories happen in the episodes that I'm watching, I know I'm going to get really sick of that. I think that, like Karen said, there was no real relevance to Wanda being a narc person to the election at all, or even to Veronica's friendship. You know, it was more of just like an undercover part of Wanda that Veronica didn't know. So why was it a big deal? You know what I mean, Karen, too?
Yeah.
I mean, I think obviously, like, this election was about Duncan, and I think it was also in about setting up, again, these class distinctions and privileges. So Wanda was just kind of a placeholder. And also, I can also see her as someone who tests Veronica's trust yet again. That would be the only relevance that I could really see for Wanda's character, which is unfortunate. A lot of these high school characters, or quite a few, you will see again. Wanda is not one of them, which is, again, kind of sad, because, I mean, there's so much more that we could know about Wanda, but I understand your frustration.
I like that actress. Her name's Rachel Roth. I was like, who is she? I know her from somewhere. I actually think know her. Yes! The Mary-Kate and Ashley movie. Okay.
She's in Winning London.
She was, like, their friend, right? Like,
yes, I believe her name was Rachel. One.
Yeah.
And she ended up dating, like, that nerdy camera guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I love that movie. So, yes. I always get really happy because I forget that there's an episode with her. And so whenever I see her, I get really excited.
Well, that's fun. Probably a little bit more excited than you got with Paris Hilton, huh?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's on a different level. Paris Hilton is on her own different level.
She is. Like I said, I can only think of House of Wax when I was watching that, and she was really bad in that movie, but oh, geez. I'm excited to see what more characters are going to drop by that may have not been big when they were in the show, but now the actors are really into, like, you know, like, for instance, Jane Lynch on Glee. And don't spoil this for me, Danielle, so I'm just going to preemptively give your obligatory no comment, but I'd hope that we... Thank you. Very good. I'd hope that we'd see more of Jane Lynch's character on this show. I could see her fitting in because she threatened the journalism teacher. And the journalism teacher is important because she's in the introduction of the show, but doesn't have a big, big, big influence on Veronica's life quite yet. So, Karen, do you think we're going to see more of the Sue Sylvester of Christmas Past or something?
I don't think so, just because... I feel like she's sort of served her purpose specifically for this episode. I would like to see her again because I think it's really funny that it was like a Sue Sylvester before Sue Sylvester. But yeah, the way that they kind of introduce characters and then take them out again, just as like, you know, the mystery of the week, I have a feeling that we won't be seeing her again. But if we do see her again, it'll be a really nice surprise.
I agree. And the only reason I want to is, like I said, it's because she threatened Veronica's journalism teacher. And Danielle, what's her name? Do you know off the top of your head? I'm sure you do.
Oh, God.
I'm putting you on the spot. I'm sorry.
Miss something with a D. I can look it up really fast. But while I'm looking this up, what I can say is that there will be more cameos or more appearances by people we're more familiar with now.
Cool.
That will make it enjoyable to see them about 10 years ago or so.
It's my favorite thing to do in any show. And Karen, while it's still in my brain, I have to tell you this. And anyone who's out there is a Teen Wolf podcast listener, not another Teen Wolf podcast listener, and followed Karen over here, you'll appreciate this too. The actress who plays Allison on Teen Wolf was a girl that Ryan Gosling hits on in the Crazy Stupid Love movie at a bar, and she's supposed to be playing like a 25-year-old when she, to me, is like Allison. You know, she's like 17 on Teen Wolf.
So, oh, yeah. No, so like, you do realize that Crystal Reed's like 28, right?
I know she's older. No, I do.
Oh, okay.
No. It's just you know, another point that, you know, randomly we'll find our favorite actors from our really like fandomy shows and other shows, yeah, and stuff too. It's very fun. So keep your guy. I'm almost thinking that's a fun feature to like, did you see Jane Lynch in this episode of Veronica Mars or something? You know, like that'd be fun to go through and do that. That'd be really cool to just do that for even Veronica Mars too, because we could always do like, you know, obviously Amanda Seyfried and then Paris Hilton and the girl you guys are talking about from Mary Kate and Ashley and all. Maybe post rewatchable though, because I want to be able to see all of the great cameo characters we're going to see, Karen, before we write up that article. But I'll call on it now. Yeah. Me and you should gather together and do that. That'd be cute. It'd be fun.
And by the way, the name of the teacher is Miss Dent. Her name is Mallory Dent.
Like Harvey Dent from Batman. That's all I remember.
Like Harvey Dent. Yes, I believe that
Two-Face.
Is her.
Two-Face. No, I don't think she's Two-Face. No,
I don't either. I don't at all. That was completely inconsequential that her name matches up with that comic book character.
I mean, I'm sure we could probably go down yet another rabbit hole and try to make connections, but no need. Okay.
Let's talk about Logan, because I'm itching to talk about him.
Yeah, Logan. Okay, yeah. Go, Karen.
Please go, Karen. Yeah.
Me? Okay. oh, my God. I can't even tell you. This character is one of the most layered characters that I think I've come across, because literally within a single episode, I've gone from hating him and feeling like he's never going to come back from some of the things that he's done, because he's done some pretty horrible things.
Yes.
To going to, in the same exact episode, feeling so sympathetic for him and knowing the reasons why he's done these things. And my head is spinning, because on the one hand, I'm like, you know what? You really suck. Like, you're so mean to Veronica. And yet, on the other hand, I'm like, oh, but, you know, inside that hard, sarcastic asshole of a character, he's a marshmallow, you guys. And I just, I can't handle it.
I love Logan. Gabrielle loves Logan even more than I do. And a lot of people who watch this show have the same exact reaction as you do. He is probably one of the best, most characterized like character I've ever seen on a TV show, because you get so many of these aspects of him within what, this is the sixth episode. So Logan is one of those characters who's really one of a kind, and he makes Veronica Mars interesting.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And this episode opens up a great talking point for a lot of things within Logan's actions, and I think a good place to start off is where he has the people that are doing the celebrity tour, and they're taking pictures of him, and he's getting his newspaper in the morning. Imagine what kind of life that's like. That's not fun. That wasn't asked for. You're pushed into the limelight. How horrible. Of course you're going to act out. Everyone's watching, and you are used to that attention. You don't know how else to use that limelight, you know?
Especially with the way that his father pushes him into it, and he's like, oh, come on, take, you know, let these people take a picture of the two of us together. It's like his father very much pushes him into that role, and yeah, he must just hate it so, so much.
Oh, but come on, how adorable is his little, like, cheesy smile that he puts on for the cameras? You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. I felt so bad for him, though. Yeah. He did not want to be there.
He didn't, but it was just so adorable. Like, that was when I agree with you, Karen. Right then and there, he was officially a marshmallow for me. Because I'm just like, I just want to go up and squidge his little cheeks. He's like a little toddler that knows he did something wrong and is just like, I'm going to smile so I don't get in trouble.
I felt bad for him. But then there's like this one part of me that kept repeating over and over what his dad said. It's like, smile for these people. They pay for this house.
And so that's kind of legitimate, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's legitimate, which makes me feel even worse, I think. Because again, he's forced into this. He didn't really have a choice in it. And if he wants to keep up living how he is, he has to do like these uncomfortable things. I don't know. It was just, that always just sticks with me. That they...
Yeah.
They pay the bills.
It's definitely a fine line, you know, because he is being forced into it. But at the same time, like, he likes his big car and his fancy toys and having lots of money and sitting at the cool kids table. And there's a reason why he's able to live that life. And so, yeah, I feel bad for him. But at the same time, I feel like he should be more grateful.
Yeah. What do we think of him? I mean, do we see him setting up this fight club with the homeless people in a different light, just kind of as a looking for attention kind of thing, but attention in a different way than like paparazzi or fans would give him?
It's attention, but I also think it's pent out aggression, because I know he doesn't want to get in the fights himself. He doesn't want to get harmed, but you know, perhaps seeing these people beating each other to a bloody pulp horrifically for money is something that he enjoys. You know, it's almost like, I don't know, let's just say, this could be completely wrong, I don't watch wrestling myself, but maybe some people watch wrestling because they like, I don't know, seeing people getting rough and tumbling because they don't want to do it themselves, but they want to see other people get into it, you know, and they find that certain enjoyment in that, because it's so visceral and deeply human. And I wouldn't go as far as to say that wrestling and these homeless people beating up each other in the boxing ring or anywhere near each other. I mean, they're obviously, first off, different sports, but I'd say that that's the equivalent of why Logan was enjoying having this unofficial boxing ring.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's got a lot of pent-up rage, and I think that he'd much rather see other people get the crap beat out of them than have him getting beat up. But I also think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he's just bored. He wants something to do, and he loves power. He loves being able to just buy people off. And this was just a way that he can control people, because he knows that these bums are going to take his $100 bill and, you know, go in this fighting ring because they don't have anything else. I really think that he loves the attention, but he also loves the control that he has over other people because of his wealth and his status.
Did we see his giving $500,000 to the shelter as kind of regaining control from his father then?
Oh, yeah. That was him trying to, at least. Not completely being able to do it. But that was his way of using his father's fame against him in a very intelligent way. And I loved that moment. And he put on his goober smile again, too, which I was just melting over. Because he's like, I know what I did wrong again. I'm just going to smile. And I think he, to a certain extent, might have felt bad for homeless people. And that's another reason he did that. Because he did have a certain conversation that we'll talk about when we get to our favorite scenes that I think really affected him and will reflect later on in his interpretation of homeless people, if that's ever another issue brought up on Veronica Mars, which I highly doubt for Logan, at least. But in the end of the day, I'd like to think him a changed person because of the homeless person he was talking to at the gas station.
Yeah, I loved this scene so much. The question here in the doc is, do we think that it was altruistic or rebellious? And honestly, I think it was 98% altruistic because when you look at his face when he's serving those people, he's smiling a genuine smile, and you can see him looking around and actually feeling sorry for what he's done. I mean, he looks ashamed, and I think he really likes giving back, and he sort of realized this, and you see that look on his face when the homeless person comes up to him, and he feels super guilty and ashamed of what he's done. And I think that, you know, there is a little bit of rebellious in that action because that's just his personality, but he knew exactly what was going to happen to him when he got home. He had to go pick out the belt, and his dad was going to hit him with it. He knew exactly what was going to happen, and I don't think that he would have done that, gone through that whole thing just to be rebellious, knowing the consequences. I think that there was a more altruistic sort of goal there for him.
And just to, I guess, break it down a little bit more, one of the things that I'm kind of struggling with at the moment is in terms of that little part of him that is being rebellious, is it to kind of just best his dad, or is it to kind of stick it to his dad or be like, you were cruel to me, now this is my way of being kind of cruel to you for all the sucky things you've done? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think honestly, he was trying to make his dad eat his words because he's like, oh, you know, his father is sort of like, I'm such this great person. I give to charity and I'm nice to all these people and stuff. But he's really not. We see that in that scene where he's on the cell phone. He's like, yeah, this is a really crappy movie, but I'm going to take it because it's going to pay me 8 figures. And I think it was just Logan's way of being like, hey, you know, you said that you wanted to be this way, so now, you know, put your money where your mouth is. And I just love that scene.
Indeed. You covered all the points that I was thinking of, Karen. Good job.
It's so
Thanks.
good. So then, Logan's dad, what do we think about him then? Is he a good guy, bad guy? Does it not really matter? I don't know. What do you think about Logan's dad?
Well, I'm going to preface my judgment of him with my prejudgment of him. So I'm prefacing with a prejudgment, if that makes sense. When I saw him push Logan down on the couch when he found out about the homeless video, that came off as abusive to me.
Oh,
And
yeah,
I saw that as being,
totally.
of course. And Karen, think Isaac from Teen Wolf. We've seen this on
Oh.
shows enough to know where this is going, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And it was sad to see it come to fruition. And when the scene happened where Logan was picking out the belt, I think I picked out something extremely minute about the, I suppose, staging of that. He picks out a belt in such a careful way, like he's picking out almost a suicide weapon. He is looking to, you know, harm himself in extreme ways, by picking out, I guess, the perfect belt or something, or maybe not the worst. I don't know. It was hard to tell. But what convinced me in that was the way he started to hold the belt. He almost made it into a noose-like fashion. Not like he was consciously thinking of it, but almost like subconsciously he thought, wow, that maybe sounds like a better out than getting beaten by my abusive father by now. And it was a horrible thought. When it happened, when I thought of that thought, that once again, that makes sense. I put my hand to my mouth and I was in such shock because I thought that this was going to be a suicide attempt. And I wouldn't even say that what happened was any better or worse than the suicide attempt in my brain. It was just also just so shocking to see that happen, you know. And it's sad that I could assume that out of Logan's character at this point. You know, I don't want to have to feel like that towards someone that we love as a marshmallow, you know.
No, actually, I was thinking the exact same thing as you, Mitch.
Really?
When he was picking out the belt, like I was like, oh, you know, here we go. Like I knew that his dad was forcing him basically to pick out the belt that he was going to be beat with, and then he took it out and he folded it, like you said, in that way. And I was like, oh my God, is he going to like attempt suicide or
It was
something?
horrible.
Like, what is going on? And I think Honestly, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I think that we were supposed to wonder what exactly was going on because it really does sort of show his mental state where we honestly wonder if he is thinking about suicide because he just hates his life so much. And after what we've seen in this episode, I kind of don't blame him. I think it's a realistic portrayal of somebody who lives that life.
Well, we have to tread carefully too, Karen, because, there's never really a reason for suicide ever. And I guess what you're saying is not that you don't blame him for wanting to commit suicide, but you see where, as a character, they would have written him in as wanting to commit suicide, right?
Right. I mean, of course, we're talking about a fictional character. I mean, this
Right.
has nothing to do with real life, but
Right,
yeah.
absolutely. Yeah, which is very different, exactly. And it's just hard because, like, suicide's a very touchy topic, so it's scary to bring it up sometimes, but, fear of a name only increases fear of a thing itself. Thank you, Dumbledore.
Yeah. I mean, since we're talking about it, I'm just gonna say this was the scene that I picked out as my favorite because of the emotion that's in it, but also just the way that it's staged, like you said, like there is all this soft light coming onto Logan's face, and you're in a very close quarters with him. You're very close. You're kind of forced into feeling what he's feeling, and that light makes him just so sympathetic. And then you see the dad, eventually you see him lurking in the background, and then at one point the camera, I think it's a pan. I can't remember if it's a pan or if it's a different shot, but you see the mother on the couch.
Oh, yeah.
And
Oh,
just
yeah.
the composition of the space between those characters is just, it tells you a lot about the family dynamics, and it just brings you into Logan's head even more. And I think it was very powerful. I mean, the first time I saw this one, I don't know what I was thinking. I'm ashamed of myself, but like, I thought he was just getting dressed to go somewhere.
Oh,
And
really?
then I'm like an English major. Like, this shouldn't happen. I should be a little bit more thoughtful than that, but
Diaries of an English Major.
I know. Oh, maybe I was tired that day. It was finals week, so maybe that's why.
No excuses. I was watching this at 2 a.m. and still into
True.
it.
It's true.
Oh, wow.
I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
I got it a few seconds in. And then it kind of clicked. But I think the more that I watch it, I think this is like my fourth time, third or fourth time around watching this scene. And it just gets not better because obviously it's not good, but the scene itself, I love it more every time, or I appreciate it more every time.
Right, you notice the
Yeah.
layers more, I guess.
I notice the nuances. Yeah.
I totally get what you mean. Like, because it is hard to say, like, oh, I really loved this scene because then you just sound really strange. But I think the more you watch it and the more you analyze it, the more meaning it has. And it's a really, really important scene. And so I think, yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from.
And my heart just breaks when I see his mom sitting there. It's
Ugh.
like everybody knows like some sort of story involving either a fictional character or someone they know where the one parent's abusive and the other one just chooses to stay out of it and is aloof like this. And to actually see it and to see her sitting on the couch, you know she's affected because she's drinking. It's heartbreaking.
And she,
It's absolutely
she's
heartbreaking.
almost shaking too when she's drinking, which is even more effective because it shows that even her crutch of alcohol can't hide her from the horrors she's witnessing right in front of her eyes. She has nothing that can hide her from the horrible life she's living in too. And the father is just ruining both Logan and his mother's worlds by doing what he's doing, by beating his son harshly with a belt.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about this scene to death, but I have a question for you guys. I wonder if do you guys think that Logan thinks that he deserves what he's getting? Because he's very calm about picking out the belt. He's very specific about the belt that he's picking out, and he just goes. I mean, he knows the routine, and I think that's part of it. But I honestly wonder, you know how people, when they're abused, they sometimes think, oh, like, it's my fault. Like, I deserve this. This needs to happen. They're
Right.
not the bad guy. I am. Do you think Logan thinks that?
I don't view it as that. I view it as him seeing it as normal, almost like a cause and effect that he has been through. Like you said, it's rehearsed. He's done it before. So I think I view the calm nature as there's no way this is not going to happen. So I either deal with it now or it's going to be worse later. I think that's how I've always seen it. I don't think I see him as blaming himself. Not that people who do that aren't clever or intelligent, but I think there's something about him that prevents him from thinking that.
Yeah, I think he has so much pent-up rage against his father and stuff that he blames his father. I don't think he would blame himself because he blames his father so much. So, yeah, I definitely saw it the same way in that it's just sort of a normal thing, which is almost as sad, you know? It is really heartbreaking to see that.
I think from where you guys are going, I can cherry-pick this theory and just say it looks like Logan's going to take large revenge on his father more than he did by saying, we're giving the shelter $500,000 because this scene happened. There are still issues that Logan hasn't solved with his father, and it's going to be a very dramatic result in the end. And it's going to be fantastic in my eyes when his father finally gets his just desserts for the horrible treatment of Logan's mother and Logan.
No comment.
I appreciate the no comment.
But yeah, I see where you're going. And Logan's dad and Logan's family is something to watch for, because obviously they set it up here, so it's something to watch for.
Indeed.
That's all I can say.
Fair enough.
All right, well then let's quickly discuss Lily's shoes and I guess its overall place in this mystery arc. Does it prove that Abel Kuntz couldn't have murdered her, or what do we get out of the two photos?
Are we meant to honestly believe that there's a possibility that he murdered her? Because, I mean, it really sets you up as, like, you kind of know that Keith was right. You know what I mean?
Abel Kuntz didn't do it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily think that that Duncan's father did it, that Lily's father did it, but I don't think that this guy did it. And so it's not really surprising to me that, oh my God, this kind of proves the theory. But it's nice to see it sort of progress and there be more evidence to back it up. But yeah, it's not like it surprised me or anything.
Yeah, no, I'm with Karen. And to me, it is just something to keep that mystery alive. They had to pump in a new fact in there, which is fine. Mm-hmm. It's people aren't going to like this that listen to the show, I've learned, but it's a lot of what Pretty Little Liars does, because every once in a while a new item of the murder of the past friend will become discovered and everyone is shocked all over again. Pretty Little Liars does a little bit too much for my tastes, kind of why I got sick of the show. But
I have a really quick question about that. Still going on about like A's murder? That's still going on.
Murder, Allison's murder. A is the anonymous leaver that is talking to all the girls and threatening them and torturing them, you know, almost physically sometimes to, basically, that's where the show's different. But anyways.
Yes, because I've never seen it, and so I can't believe they're still going on. But all right.
Well, it's funny that you haven't seen it, because if we're talking about movie suggestions, TV suggestions, Pretty Little Liars. I'm sorry, people. Try it. Just try it. You never know.
Yeah. One day I'll get to it. It's on my list. But yeah, I'm sorry. Keep going. I was just curious about that.
No, yeah, that was just the point that I was making, that they're keeping Lily's murder mystery alive. And Veronica is going to hallucinate about her now because it was her turn, basically. And hers was a little bit more legitimate because it was a dream. And I could see Lily saying all that she did, you know, like something about like, have you seen any horror movies? I'm doomed to haunt the earth until my spirit is set free. Oh, and I give fashion advice too. It was cute.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much all that we can discuss about Lily's shoes. Because Abel Kuntz hasn't played a role yet, but we'll get there.
Good.
So, yeah.
I'm seeing something relating to the series Scream, if anyone's ever seen that. I won't spoil anything of it. But if you have seen it, you know what I'm talking about. Because the mystery of who done it, who's the murderer, is very important in the Scream series.
Right. I'm trying to get where you're going with that, because I'm not there yet. I've seen it.
Oh, okay. I'll give another vague hint. Someone murdered Sydney's mother. That's it. That's all I can do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a while. I'll have to look that up.
It actually greatly relates to this, and it's a fabulous series. Very much so. Once again, another movie I suggest to you if you like Veronica Mars.
Yeah. That's actually one, like, scary movie that I can do because it breaks it down and it's really interesting.
That movie.
So if you're like me and you're kind of a pansy, you can do Scream
because it has enough.
Do it in the daytime, but it's interesting. It's not just like scary and slasher. Like it breaks down horror movies. So yeah.
And I think it has that Veronica Mars element to it, where it likes to find out who's the killer from very logistical reasons. It goes through step by step to find out, and you are definitely swung around and you believe who you're supposed to believe is the murderer when you're supposed to. So that's where I think Veronica Mars is going to lead us. And that's why it's cool that those two series are just so excellent and we can suggest, you know, Scream for you guys.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, that you believe who they want you to believe.
That's the best part. I mean, that's like a good Scooby-Doo episode.
That is very accurate. I mean, that's not a spoiler, but that is very accurate.
Thank you. Thanks.
Good observation. All right. So if we don't have anything else to say, let's move on to our favorite scenes. Mine, we already talked about in depth, was the belt scene. So Karen, your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was when Veronica finally tells her dad what she's been up to and what she knows about Lily's case. And they're sort of frank with each other for the first time in a long time. And it was just really, really refreshing for me because I hate those movies or TV shows or storylines where if the person had just told the truth, none of this would have happened. And it was starting to get frustrating that they were going behind each other's backs and keeping secrets, especially when they have such a strong and wonderful relationship, that I'm just so glad she stopped and turned around and was like, "You know I'm lying."
Yeah, that was great. That was great. I agree.
That's a great line. Yeah.
And I think that my scene really relates a lot to what we were talking about already. So we probably don't have to go too much in depth in it. But when the homeless person that Logan tries to lure into his fighting ring by putting a $100 bill on his window at his car while the homeless man is watching his windshield, he later talks to Logan again as they're heading off to the soup kitchen, and he's like, "Oh, who's selling themselves now?" You know, and that was a good changing moment for Logan to show that, like I said, he likes homeless people perhaps more, and or has more respect for them. And in the end of the day, will think more about where he throws around his money, his fame, his power.
Yeah, I like that too. I really like that homeless man. I thought that he was a good fit. I don't know why. I just kind of gravitated toward him. So,
well, it was probably because he had a sign that was very humble in that he said donations accepted, but never like, you know, because Logan's like, "I'm not paying you." And he's just like, "I didn't ask you to."
Yeah, I liked that. I really did.
Yeah.
Okay. Favorite lines. When does mine happen? I don't even know.
During the Wanda narked out Veronica.
We are so, I forgot what episode we were on and what happened with Veronica because we've been talking about Logan for so long. Okay. Yes. So after Wanda tells on Veronica and the police come to search her locker, you have Deputy Sachs and Sheriff Lamb standing there, and Veronica goes, "There's a couple of suckers in the bag if you want one." And I love it.
That was very funny.
It's great.
I just love the way she always is so sarcastic with them and always beats them. You know, it's just, they must get so frustrated by her.
I love it. Karen, your favorite line?
My favorite line was from Veronica to Wanda. And she says, "You know what? No hard feelings. I didn't vote for you." And on the one hand, I actually kind of felt bad for Wanda here because this was such a dig at her. But on the other hand, thinking back to Duncan and like what we saw of him, what we learned of him, I was just like, you know what? I would have voted for Duncan too, I think.
Yeah, I think I would have ended up voting for Duncan at this way because I think it makes more sense that the person who wasn't as enthusiastic about it might do a better job. You know, that's where I was coming from with that.
Yeah.
But and then my favorite quote was Veronica to her father when she says, "You're in luck, Philip Marlowe, because it's dessert for dinner tonight and I've got a Sunday thing set up here." I was like, "Oh, how cute. I want dessert for dinner now."
Yeah.
It was funny. It was very funny.
Almost as good as our mac and cheese conversation.
Oh, yes, definitely. Great conversation. I like the real kind. No, I like the fake kind more.
Thanks, everybody, for your feedback. We're running kind of long, so we're going to skip it for this week, but we really appreciate everybody talking to us on the posts and everything, and we will be talking right back to you, as you can already see. So thank you for your feedback, and we'll get to those next time. That's us. We're signing off for this one. We'll be back with our next rewatchable episode discussing episodes 7 and 8. I'm Danielle.
I'm Mitch.
And I'm Karen.
And we'll see you later. Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.